Coming up on KSCP News, raptor cripples drone and genetically engineered salmon. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on July 25th, 2017. While Unalaskans have long been resigned victims to eagle attacks, advances in technology have introduced a less prepared prey, drones. KUCB's Brett Wilbur has more on the most recent casualty.
Before sending a $6,000 drone to record aerial footage in Unalaska, Emmett Fitch warned the pilot he might want to reconsider one thing.
It's black with a white body. I said, that looks a lot like an eagle. We should maybe paint it a different color.
Fitch, who runs local Wi-Fi provider Optimera, was helping an advertising agency shoot promotional footage. The Robertson and Partners team flew up from Las Vegas to film on a bluebird day. But things did not go as planned.
All of a sudden, they just lost comms with the drone. What's going on, you know? And so he's frantically hitting the button that says, you know, return home, return home.
The team was worried. The pilot wanted to prove he wasn't at fault so the drone's insurance coverage would kick in. But none of them were exactly sure what happened.
So he was able to go back and look at the footage in slow motion right towards the end. And it just, you can see it, the yellow part of the eagle talon. And then it's gone.
Fitch says they couldn't believe it. Their footage was gone, and their plans were ruined.
After it happened, it was kind of like we all lost a member of the team.
While eagle-drone interactions are unusual, they're not unheard of. Police in France and the Netherlands have trained the raptors to snatch drones from the sky. Unalaska gets that service for free, and this time it's paying local dues. With their machine out of commission, a local drone pilot says the company turned to him for footage instead. As for the future of drones in Unalaska, Emmett Fitch feels there is a clear solution.
They should be made, you know, to look different than birds of prey.
In Unalaska, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
Alaska's credit was downgraded by two credit agencies last week. The state had the highest possible rating at the beginning of 2016. But the legislator has failed to fix Alaska's multi-billion dollar deficit for two straight years, leading to a series of downgrades. APRN's Andrew Kitcherman reports on what that means for Alaska.
Alaska's credit rating comes into play when the state issues bonds to pay for infrastructure. For example, Alaska's government can issue $100 million in bonds left from nearly half a billion voters approved in 2012. If the state issued those bonds before the rating downgrades that began in January 2016, it would cost $250,000 to $300,000 less per year than now. Over the 20-year life of a bond, that would add up to $5 million to $6 million. Those estimates are by Devin Mitchell. He's the state's debt manager in charge of trying to protect the credit rating.
It's akin to a credit score that you might see deteriorating due to credit issues that you might have experienced in your personal life and a correlated increase in cost for purchase of consumer goods on credit or a car or a home loan.
Moody's downgraded Alaska's credit rating from AA2 to AA3 last week, while Standard & Poor's downgraded it from AA+ to AA on Tuesday. Mitchell says the state doesn't plan on issuing any bonds this year, but if the credit rating remains lower when it does, the cost will add up.
If you could keep $5 million in your pocket rather than just giving it to somebody because of a perceived risk, you'd do so.
The credit rating doesn't just affect the state. There are other organizations that issue bonds whose ratings depend on the state's, such as the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. Borough and city governments frequently rely on the bond bank. Mitchell says this could lead to higher taxes.
You can see directly, well, that money would have either not needed to have been collected or would have been available for another purpose if the interest expense on our $20 million project was less because the state had a better credit rating.
In the case of the city and borough of Juneau, the state's worsening credit outlook may cause the municipal government to issue bonds on its own in the future instead of using the bond bank. While Juneau's rating used to be lower than the state's, they're the same now. Juneau Finance Director Bob Bartholomew says the falling ratings are one of many reasons why it's important for the legislature to resolve its differences over a plan to balance the state's budget.
We may be headed towards having a higher credit rating than the bond bank. And in that case, it's still more expensive for us than what it was prior to the downgrades.
Mitchell says the $60 billion Alaska Permanent Fund traditionally didn't always help the state's credit rating. That was despite the fact the legislature could tap the fund to pay its bills if it needed to.
I've had rating analysts tell me historically that there's no way the state will ever spend money out of the permanent fund for governmental services.
But Governor Bill Walker's decision to veto permanent fund dividend money last year and the legislature providing less than the amount laid out by state law this year may help Alaska's credit ratings in the future. It was a signal that the fund could be used for more than just PFDs.
It got us closer to a point that I believe you were going to be able to start receiving full credit for the permanent fund in our credit analysis, because in my view, we're not receiving that credit at this point.
But all is not rosy in the ratings outlook. The state has 1 year left in the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, a piggy bank that's covered annual deficits up until now.
It could be that we have another year next year where it's too difficult to reach agreement between the two different positions that exist within the legislature, and we wind up using the CBRF again one last time, and then everybody will know the next year something will have to change.
Or Alaska could face its third straight summer with lower credit ratings. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Federal regulators have already approved a genetically engineered salmon for human consumption. One reason it's not for sale in the U.S.? A few short paragraphs that have hitched a ride on a congressional spending bill. It says GE salmon can't be sold until the FDA publishes final labeling guidelines and the agency hasn't. Senator Lisa Murkowski has again inserted that rider in the agriculture spending bill, which would continue the restriction for a year. The bill cleared the Appropriations Committee last week. Murkowski told the committee the labeling has to be mandatory.
Instead, right now, labeling is voluntary. And if you think that any manufacturer of Frankenfish is going to voluntarily put that on the label of that fish, you're not thinking straight.
A company called Aqua Bounty is growing an engineered salmon in Panama from eggs that are fertilized with genetically altered milt in Canada. The product is designed as a fast grower for fish farming. In 2015, the FDA ruled the fish is safe for human consumption. Murkowski's writer also said the acceptable market name for the Aqua Bounty fish has to include the terms genetically engineered, or GE. Murkowski has also filed a separate GE salmon labeling bill.
If families are going to serve this, then I think they deserve to know that what you're eating is not the wild-caught salmon.
Mandatory labeling for genetically modified organisms is controversial in Congress. Many farm state lawmakers says there's no scientific basis to label GMO foods differently, and they maintain it will erode public confidence in GMO crops. Murkowski says a genetically engineered fish is different. And that's the news from Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams, and you're listening to KSDP 830 AM.